Okay, we are going to start the meeting. My name is Jill Hood. I'm going to be chairing the Community Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee. If you have your phones switched on, could you please have them on silent? Otherwise, you'll be donating to the Mayor's charity. If you do want to speak, just raise your hand, and if I don't spot you, then Andrew will. I hope. Okay. So, minutes of the 22nd of July 2021, as previously published on the Council's website. Noted. Thank you. Andrew, apologies, please.
Yes, thank you. I've got apologies from Councillors Louise Nixon, who substituted this evening, by Councillor Angela Loughran, and from Councillor Jonathan Price.
Thank you. No public question time?
No.
No councillor session?
No.
Members' items. Item number 5A, the Health and Care Overview and Scrutiny Committee. We can note this or we can go through it. Page 5, Wally's Quarry. I would just I'd just like to say that a number of us here in this room were actually at a very important meeting which took place, and Councillor Jeremy Pert chaired the meeting, and he did very well, and it was an absolute eye-opener. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was incredible. And although I'd seen it on social media, on the television, heard radio interviews, I really hadn't realised the seriousness of it. And I would like to think that that meeting did make a difference towards the outcome. Jeremy, I don't know whether you want to say anything about that.
I wasn't going to specifically, but for background, we had the Director of Public Health, Richard Harling, for Staffordshire, the Environment Agency and Public Health England at the meeting. And there were a range of thematic questions that the committee wanted to have a better understanding of, because Public Health England had only recently changed their advice and position on the impact on residents' health coming from the principally the hydrogen sulphide, which is that rotten eggs smell that comes from organic decomposition. So there shouldn't have been any organic matter within the landfill site. It had been operating as a landfill site from memory since about 2006. And in the latter couple of years, I would suggest that organic matter has got into that quarry, into that landfill site. And that is the emission of, or the source of the emission. The Environment Agency is operating under one set of criteria and processes and procedures, which is probably what the chair is referring to. So they feel that they have to work with the provider to try and bring the gas under control, and for local residents it must be more than frustrating, must be devastating to continue to see vehicles going in. Literally, I was there for one day for about half an hour and there was 20 odd vehicles going. So it must be devastating for those people who are being dramatically affected. Hydrogen sulphide is a gas that is very heavy, so it doesn't move very quickly. So once it's there, in and around your home, it pervades all things. I don't think we should just focus in on hydrogen sulphide, because there are other gases that may be given off or from that landfill site that may be undetectable to the human nose but may be harmful to health. Now, in fairness to, the Environment Agency don't see health as a key parameter that they have to work to. And instead, that's the role of Public Health England. So the fact that there is now a difference of advice from Public Health England is not the critical concern of the Environment Agency. And I think that was the message that they kept giving. And that actually they were operating to the maximum of their powers and they weren't able to close down the landfill site. They weren't able to instruct the landfill site to do something different. Actually, in fairness, they hadn't even shared all the data with Public Health England. There were a number of failures and failings that were highlighted after that meeting. It's worth watching the 2.5-3 hours back, because I think we get to a point where the Environment Agency very clearly say we've come to the level of our end of our powers. Someone else needs to take hold of this. Subsequently, there was an abatement notice which was put on the landfill operator, which used to be Red Industries, but is now Wally's Quarry Limited, and that has been subsequently appealed in the courts. So they continue to tip there, it's completely unacceptable that that continues. And Newcastle Borough Council have aligned a budget of £1 million to go and stop the tipping of stuff by Wally's Quarry until the gas is brought under control. If you're healthy, it's not as much of an issue. It is an issue because it's uncomfortable. People wake you up in the middle of the night with headaches, nausea, can't sleep, you know, all of those sorts of symptoms. But if you maybe are young and your lungs are still developing, there could be a long-term impact to young people. If you have an existing, pre-existing health condition, a respiratory condition, again, those symptoms will be exasperated. I think that was probably the sum total in summary of what came from that meeting. Really important that the County Council took a lead on this from a health scrutiny point of view, because prior to that, there hadn't been that ability to expose some of those issues. Members will have seen maybe through the High Courts there was an injunction which came through last week about a specific young person who was dramatically affected by that.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going round. Anne Hobbs.
That's what I was going to say, that there's been a test case, hasn't there, now, where they have said that that child's health was being affected by the fumes. So hopefully that will help.
Through you, Chair. I shouldn't comment on an individual case, so I won't, if you don't mind. But I think it is through a variety of routes, both through the Director of Public Health of Staffordshire, through the Health and Health and Care Overview and Scrutiny Committee, through the Borough Council's environmental, not ours, the Newcastle Borough Council's environmental environmental health people, and through the Cabinet at Newcastle, between all of us and the MP Aaron Bell. I think that is how we put sufficient pressure on the government to stand in, because if the Environment Agency don't have enough will, then somebody needs to take control of that situation. And I think that's probably where we're moving towards, and that's really important for the health of not just that child, but anyone. You can have people, there's 21,000 people affected within a 3-mile radius, but you've got people out at Trenton, you've got people in Stone, you've got people all over the place. It isn't just a Silverdale issue, this is a much wider issue. Stoke residents in Stoke have complained about it. It is a much wider issue than just that Silverdale ring.
Yes, thank you. Anne Edgell is next, thank you.
Yes, I attended that meeting in Newcastle, and I've got to say, Jill and Jeremy are right. I mean, the things that brought forward was quite horrifying, and all right, it's affecting people's mental health as well. But I think one thing we've got to mention also, it's still on the radar with the County Council, with your committee, Jeremy. So we're still, in the background there doing our bit. Yeah.
Thank you. Ray.
Yeah, thank you, Jeremy. The good thing is that it's well publicised the news about all the issues, and won't mention any particular case, but there are concerns about health issues and mental health issues. I think one of the biggest problems, you mentioned that the gases aren't dispersing. And one of the problems we have during the summer is that we've had very little wind. And back in the year, we haven't had much wind during the year, so that's not helped it. But the I'm pleased to see that you've written to government to highlight the length of time over emissions affecting the site. And I just wondered if you've heard anything back from government? Or
I do have a letter back from government. There is some work I need to do on it, so it's not yet a document that we've shared with the
okay.
committee.
All right. But it will come to committee probably next time.
It will probably be circulated before, before
right.
committee. I there's just a couple of bits of work I need to do on it before I want to...
Sure. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Tony Bentley.
Thank you, Chair. I'm pleased to see that the committee decided to write to government. Because at the end of the day, that's where the buck stops. I think it's very concerning that, first of all, the situation arose in the first place, which suggests that the regulations relating to this weren't tight enough. And secondly, that it's been going on for so long. This is what, 2-3 years after. It's become a major issue, not just since residents have been complaining about it, but it does suggest that the regulatory framework just isn't tight enough. And something that we hear often is about cutting regulations or having a bonfire of red tape or regulations. And this is the sort of thing that results, when people are given a free rein. And I do think this is something that I hope we will endorse the decision taken there to contact government about it.
Thank you. Councillor Cooper.
Yeah, just educational purposes, really, as to what input the borough can have on this issue, because the quarry itself is outside the borough, it's in the Newcastle. I guess some of our wards over that way are catching some of the fallout from it. But have we got any direct input into it? Can we be that proactive, or is it not within our remit?
Councillor Brown.
So, I think it's a really useful question, through you, Chair, because I think it does demonstrate what this committee and what the County Council Committee can look at. Because one of the lessons from mid-staffs way back, just want to remind you of the date.
2007, 2008, 2009.
Thank you. One of the lessons from mid-staffs is different parties thinking someone else is doing scrutiny when they're not, or duplication of scrutiny. Mm. So the County Council has a very clear remit in terms of anything which is cross-cutting or goes across multiple districts or boroughs gets picked up centrally. So a good example, GP access. You know, it's a central issue. It affects all of Staffordshire. There are very few places that aren't being impacted. If, however, it was an issue about one GP surgery, that should be picked up locally by the district or borough. So the equivalent committee, which is this committee, could pick up something which is about one area, but not multiple areas. And that was why the health and care overview and scrutiny committee at county picked up the issue, because it applied to Stoke, Newcastle and bits of Stafford Borough. And that's why we did that. And obviously you can apply that logic, to any issue, that you might as a committee want to review. The committee, and I'm not here as the chair of the health and scrutiny committee, albeit it does feel like it, this committee can pick up anything it wants to, providing it doesn't stray into the county remit.
Thank you. Is that all right with you?
That's fine.
Okay. Can we move on then? The George Bryan Centre. Does anyone want to comment on this, or can we note this?
I can say that at the meeting, which I didn't attend, I did virtually, but I wasn't allowed to speak because I was only a member virtually at that meeting. But there's a public consultation, but I think I've seen it today somewhere about the drug planning centre, and it's going out to people in Tamworth, Lichfield, and that area, because it affects that area. So but that's there's a lot going on there. There's nothing being decided as yet. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
The George Bryan Centre is a mental, a bit like St George's Room, across the St George's, it's part of the MBTS, but it was burnt down, how long ago, was it 2 years ago? Yeah, and now, so a lot of the patients there were actually placed in St George's, so now they're trying to decide whether to still build it back up and make it useful, or what to do, you know, so it's a public consultation that's going to be taking place about it. But it's not in this area, so
thank you. Thank you. Maternity services?
Again, the maternity services itself, again, that's still being discussed and what have you, and we've noted it, and it could be brought back to the Health Select Committee at County before any decision is made.
I was discussing this earlier with Councillor Loughran, and obviously I've worked at the hospital in London, and the reason it wasn't used is because there's no neonatal unit, because you can't have women giving birth if you haven't got the emergency backup available, and that wasn't run, the previous one wasn't run with a neonatal consultant, and so it's safer for people to go to Stowe, where they've got a huge neonatal unit and its own consultant.
Yeah, I mean, check through your chairman. I mean, I think it grew just in the numbers actually that was going to Stoke to have the babies. The ladies going to Stoke, and they weren't using Stafford, and I think that's caused the bit of yeah. But it will come back to the Health Select Committee before any decision.
Okay. Sorry, Councillor Pearce.
Well, I just want to say that before too long we have a proper maternity unit in Stafford. I mean, you know, we're having new estates built in various places in the borough, populations increasing all the time, and yet people are going to go to Stoke to give birth. I think it's ludicrous that a town the size of Stafford shouldn't have its own maternity unit. And I hope that we would, that we and others will press for that to happen.
Thank you. Councillor Loughran.
Thank you, Chair. I was actually endorsed what Councillor Pearce said, in that whilst we accept and acknowledge that the North staff do have these facilities, then we in Stafford, and I hope our Stafford councillor would be pushing for the consultant to be in Stafford. We don't just say that Stoke has got these facilities and we've got a consultant up there. Stafford doesn't have them and didn't have them. We say that's what we want in Stafford, to make sure that our mothers are not having to travel from Stafford back to Stoke. You do hear some tremendous stories about the mothers going up to Stoke, and it's not a really good experience being driven up there for an emergency. So we don't really just say, don't have a consultant, a push for the consultant, as well as the facilities. Because I understood that there's a lot of money spent in actually providing the facility in Stafford, the actual physical provision of it. It's there. So it really is to make sure that it is being properly peopled to give us the facility that we need and deserve in Stafford.
But we can't just have a maternity unit, we've got to have a neonatal unit as well.
I know, but I'm saying that that's
got to push for both.
You can push for all.
Councillor Sutherland is next.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll come back on that.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, of course, excuse me, Stafford used to have its own maternity unit. Excuse me. fact, I was talking to you about it earlier. Frances, my wife, used to work there. She was there. And it, from memory, because I used to visit the place to pick up and drop off, it was a very well-used hospital. Now, I don't know why they closed it, but I can see the point that everyone makes about having a unit here again. I suppose in the end it's all going to be boiled down to money.
I think our art, as I say, I think the decision was made because, as I said, the number of people using it, they prefer to go to Stoke. But at the end of the day, let's remember, no decision's been set in concrete yet, so it's still out for consultation and decision making. And it will not, decision will not be made unless it comes through to our Health Select Committee.
Can I take Councillor Cooper first and then you? Or are you just swinging your glasses?
Okay. I mean, is the people elect to go to Stoke? People are have elected to go to Stoke rather than Stafford, presumably because of the bad press that Stafford got.
That wasn't it. Because of the lack of emergency backup. Because they shut the neonatal unit, they continued with the midwifery unit, but if anything goes wrong, people have to be blue lighted up to Stoke. So people are saying, well, rather than go through that, I'd sooner have a baby in Stoke.
Chair, I mean, that kind of goes against the trend for people to have their babies at home.
Well, it says here that the committee had asked for further data about the transfer home birth, so
yeah.
You need that before you can make any comment.
I think that Councillor Pearce has a point here that the amount of the increase in houses, new homes,
yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds, surely, you know, it's time that perhaps we can use our voice and ask. I'm going to take Councillor Pert next. Councillor Pearce.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first thing I should say is that Stafford has an excellent maternity unit, and its quality is certainly highly regarded. Secondly, I should say that this is this came to committee about the process of consultation and that they're going to go through.
Mm.
So nothing has been decided, and I would encourage every member of this committee interested in maternity services to watch the proceedings, because I think they were thorough and robust.
Mm.
Thirdly, I'm not going to. I'm here as a cabinet member for the Borough Council. But I would encourage members to look at the Ockenden review and to look at the Beth Berths review, because I think without looking at the health side of things rather than the geography side of things, it's very easy to be overbalanced on geography and not to look at what the best advice is for mother and baby. And there are two issues here. I do accept there's a geography issue. I do accept there's a population issue. But actually, people are already voting with their feet, and we have to make sure whatever the end outcome is it is the safest possible answer for mother and baby.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Pearce.
Thank you. Well, I wouldn't disagree for a moment that we want the safest possible outcome, but what we want is also an outcome that gives mothers in Stafford the opportunity to give birth here and not having to travel to Stoke. But the point I wanted to make is that, you know, we talk about going to Stoke, but actually the volume of work there is such that at times people have to be transferred, for example, to Telford. You know, I a friend who had twins, she had to go to Telford to give birth. I mean, it just isn't on. We should be pressing hard for there to be a proper maternity, consultant-led maternity unit in Stafford.
Thank you. Okay. Does anyone want to talk about the COVID-19 update? I know we're all getting very well informed almost every other day with numbers, and so can we leave it there? Or does anyone? Councillor Lockhart.
Thank you, Chair. I would really just comment and say that I am a bit disappointed in what appears to me to be the withdrawal of the facility to go and have a COVID test, because at one time there were quite a few areas in Stafford that were there permanently, but now you're actually dependent on the list that actually is coming out to us. And for example, I was under the impression that the Kingston Centre was a centre where you could actually go just to be tested. And several weeks ago I went down to get a test, they said, oh, we don't do testing here any longer, you know, you only need a vaccination. And you have to really look and see, where is the van going to be in Stafford? Because I say at one time there was a van in Stafford every day of the week, there isn't now. So I think they've actually withdrawn the number of times that the van is actually in Stafford.
Thank you. I seem to see marquees every time I go out anywhere. I know in Stonehouse High Street keeps popping up all the time. Councillor Pert, did you want to speak?
Thank you. Through you, Chair, I think we're probably in a different phase of the virus. Certainly the virus hasn't gone away, and some of those people who think it has and are going around with gay abandon may need just to just maybe to take half a step backwards and just consider the situation. There is obviously good news in that 89 was that the figure from yesterday, and 81% of people in Staffordshire have had dose 1 and dose 2, so vaccinations are very good at this moment. We've started the rollout of the third vaccination for those most vulnerable. But coming to the direct question, there's only about 7% of people in Stafford Borough who are taking any tests, whether it's PCR or lateral flow. So unfortunately, there's no point in putting on facilities for people if they're not going to use them. And we let them run for a long while, and we weren't getting people across the door. But I think you make a really good point, because we should all be trying to encourage people to do the lateral flow test twice a week, because it is through identifying those people who are COVID positive, and there's still 20, 30,000 people a day who are catching COVID, and then closing down that opportunity to transmit and give it to other people. So I think the council makes a really good point. The sooner we can close people down. Staffordshire figure is about 93% of people are contact tracing. So, you know, the system behind is really effective and working well.
Mm.
But if we as councillors can encourage people to just take maybe a bit more precaution, then we can get on with our lives, whatever that looks like post-COVID. But we still need to do a bit of testing.
But Chair, through you, without making it into a discussion with you, there are people who don't like doing the lateral flow tests. There are people who actually don't feel confident enough to actually test themselves and feel that they want to be able to go somewhere and be tested, as opposed to, you know, shoving something up their nose and down their throat. Some people just don't like doing that and don't feel confident enough that they're doing it properly. So as I said, a lot of conversation
Thank
you, Chair.
Thank you. Anybody else want to speak on that? Or?
No.
Okay. So, can we now then go?
Can I
yes, absolutely.
All right. There was a meeting held on Monday, the Health Select Committee, as we were there. Yes, Chairman, chaired it very well, you know. And our report back on the 16th of November to this committee, what took place. But just give you a bit of insight. We did have Marcus Walls and Simon Whitehouse and the GP Stephen Fawcett. Talking about urgent emergency care and the difficult decisions that's having to be made, they're asking the public. There'll be a lot of public consultation taking place, so keep your eyes and ears open and make sure that you know you do get involved in any questions that's asked, you know, as members of the public, and pass that on to your
any groups that are involved with it as well. And also, again, ambulance service was brought into being, and the wait that for people waiting for an ambulance. So again, the Health Select Committee, through Jeremy, Councillor Pert, will be asking Anthony Marsh to come and give an explanation to the ambulance waits. And again, COVID update was given, and I did ask the question to Paddy Andrew Hannigan whether you could have your flu test, your flu jab and your third booster jab at the same time, and would it affect your health? And the answer came back, no, it wouldn't affect your health, and you can have it done at the same time. So I just want to point out as well, if I can, Chairman,
yes, certainly.
You, there will be a public consultation going out about mental health at the end of September, because the county are pulling together the mental health strategy, which will come out probably in April next year. But they want everybody to be involved. So can I ask through you, Chairman, to ask Andrew to let all members know that there will be a mental health public consultation taking place at the end of September, and for every councillor to make sure that all groups that they're involved with, that they take part in this public consultation. Because speaking to Andy Marris at the county, he said he wants the good and bad feedback as well, so we know exactly the mental health. So, you know, what they're working on is trying to get a pathway so people know where to go. So we all know at the moment it's fragmented. So I'm asking all councillors to make sure that they put that message out to the public.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Councillor Edgeley. That's quite valuable to all of us. Okay, so if we can now move on to page 10. And Tracy, if you'd like to come and give your report, please.
Thank you, Chair. So this is quarter one performance report. So we've kept with the same format as last year. So you have performance at a glance, the improvement report and the narrative updates. But we have actually stopped using the emojis, and we've put a narrative marker where to denote the progress made. So in terms of performance at a glance, that's on page 13. So there's 10 reported indicators, there's 4 reporting below target, and also 2 narrative reports reporting below target. But there's improvement reports contained on page 18 of the appendix, Chair. So
thank
I'm happy to go through page by page. Just like to state that it still remains quite a busy time for officers, because some service areas are still involved in the response phase of the pandemic.
So. Thank you. So, Tracy, I'd like to ask, and I'm not being flippant, it's a genuine question, L14, the number of residents who think the town centres are clean and tidy. Well, each time it's an excellent percentage. But how on earth do we keep on asking this, or is it just a repeat of before? Do we have something on the bottom of forms that are given out, or... when anyone calls in, do they say, by the way, is the town clean?
The Health Office will be able to provide a far better answer than I can
try. Yeah, so there's actually an explanation on the following page on 2.22. So virtually what we do is anybody who contacts the council via the contact centre on a street scene related issue, we obviously take their details and then we give a ring back as a part of a consultation on their satisfaction with cleanliness. So they might not have complained about a cleanliness issue, it might be some other street scene issue, but we use them as the data set to ask them what their opinions are. So it's a contact back from the contact centre.
Thank you, Robert. I do think that we have got extremely well cleaned high streets, you know. It's to me, there's never any gripe about it. It's always amazing. Councillor Loughran.
Thank you, Jim. First of all, I'm going to see yet again. I think that the print and this piece of print, this is is shocking.
Yes, it is.
You know, I said this the last time, but I'm not joking.
No, no.
You know, there's actually only, there's about a third of the page that's not used. And I found I was sitting there, and my husband says, well, why don't you go and get a magnifying glass? I shouldn't have to go and get a magnifying glass to read reports. And I don't know about the rest of you, I don't consider this a... Well, I do actually have a vision impairment. I only see through one eye. But by the same token, I do think the print is exceptionally small, and it could be a bit bigger.
Yes, perhaps that's something that we can address.
And I said
address.
That the last time, you know, there's no... Don't get rid of it. I just think this is very disappointing. But if I could go back then, please, to the very first one here. Where is it? Is it a page 13? Yeah, are we talking actually, is that fly tipping? You know, 355 reported incidents. And I think it's excellent that you're dealing with so many so quickly. And is it fly tipping? And where are the environment crimes being reported to? Is it a street scene, or is it a ring through to environmental health, or is it just to the general switchboard?
So what we've got is there's two methods really. A couple of years back, we empowered our street scene people to actually deal with problems as they saw them. In the past, what used to happen is the men and women in the service used to get all their work on paper. So they would have a job in Stone, so they'd drive up to Stone and do that job. But if there was something that's flighted at Aston, they wouldn't have dealt with it at that time because they hadn't got a ticket to deal with it. So what we did is moved over to a handheld system, and so when they went up to do their job in Stone, if they saw a fly tipping in Aston, they would actually stop and they would deal with it and they would self-record it onto the system. So what they were doing is actually doing some self-reporting, but actually doing a better service. And what we saw over time was that less and less people actually complained about fly tipping because we were dealing with it before they actually picked up the phone to contact the council. So the methods of those 331 is those which we've self-reported because we've seen them and picked them up on the way, and some are from where members of the public have either contacted street scene or contacted environmental health via the contact centre. So what happens is when we find these fly tips, is that say it's a street scene person who finds it on the roadside, what they'll do is they'll look at it in the first instance to see if there's potentially any evidence in there which could direct us to carry out an investigation. So if there's some envelopes in there, some paperwork, or sometimes photographs, people, it's amazing what people actually throw away, or then they will actually then call in the Environment Crime Investigation Team to look at it to take forward any potential prosecution. If there's nothing in there, they will just pick it up and close the case off. So we have a triaging system which makes us as efficient as possible from what we used to be. And that's why we can get through a lot of fly tips. Some of these in the past would never have been even reported by members of the public. They would have just been left there. So what we call a fly tip, there's actually a definition that comes from central government. So every council is consistent in its reporting. It's a load which is equivalent to a black bag. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a black bag, then that is counted, you know, the amount that counts as a fly tip. And they can vary from a black bag to a lorry load of rubble being dropped off or whatever. And over time, you get different seasons, you get different things that are dropped off. So, for example, during the pandemic, we were finding when people having building works done, that we had a lot of rubble, and we did a lot of prosecutions against builders from out of the area who thought it was convenient to actually come in, do the job, and then drop the rubble off in our country lanes.
Yeah,
We've got a very good record, but two very good officers who go around and do prosecutions. We do get some high level fines.
Yeah, I've just seen it here, I think it is excellent that there are so many being dealt with so quickly. And you know, it's well done. And I think also that Phil Bates ought to be, told, they're doing a great job here as well. It's absolutely super. That was on page 13, but there was one, and it's also dealt with on page 14.
Can we just take one page at a time,
right,
Councillor Loughran? Sorry, Councillor Pearce, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did. It's on the position of strict cleanliness, as it is. And I think overall, the position is good. That's thanks very much to the street scene, but also to groups and individuals in the litter picking, supported by street scene, and that's excellent. The one area I would query a bit is the emptying of litter bins. It was a problem during COVID, and I think for various reasons for that, but it still seems to be a problem. I'm a bit concerned about that.
You're absolutely right. It's amazing how people's habits have actually changed, because obviously people are doing a lot more exercise during the pandemic, and they were actually going out and then putting rubbish into bins.
Mm.
People are still going out and doing a lot, so we've not gone back to habits before the pandemic, so we're still getting an increased amount of rubbish going into our litter bins. So what we would really like to say to people is, if you've got some rubbish, instead of putting it in the litter bin, take it home. That's what we would encourage people to do, take it home and put it, because if you put it in a rubbish bin, you're relying on somebody else collecting it for you to dispose of. So we do recognise that there is still some issues of emptying bins, we're trying to get on top of it, but it is to some extent a resource issue, because we're getting more rubbish in litter bins than ever before. But like Councillor Pearce has said, we are indebted to Litter Heroes and other organisations who go out and litter pick. They do a wonderful job. We provide, obviously, litter pickers for them free of charge, which are paid for, by the way, by fines. So whenever we find somebody, that money is actually ring-fenced. It doesn't go into the general account. And we use that money then to buy litter pickers for these groups, and then obviously go and support them to take the waste home. It's quite interesting, because some residents say, it's your litter, council. And we have to say, it's not our litter. We don't litter the place. It's the population. So, the council working together with groups is great. And I think probably in Stafford, we're better blessed than most councils with those volunteers.
Mm.
It's one of my personal bugbears when I hear councillors asking, can we have more bins on such and such or such? And I think, why would you want to litter beautiful green areas with loads of bins? Take your rubbish home with you. And it's excellent in the winter when your dog's just pooped and your hands are cold. It keeps them really warm. Councillor Cooper.
Lovely.
I agree on that one, yeah. It is an enigma, having more bins. One thing I would pick up on is that I've taken issue with people on social media when they whinge about the council not clearing rubbish. And I say, no, I'm not having this. You've left the rubbish, Mr. Public, not the council. Council clearing up after you, and that really grates on those. The other one I wanted to ask was that I'm often asked at parish councils is the, the community facility? Is that returning soon?
At the moment it isn't. We're keeping it under review. And one of the reasons is obviously what we have to do is for the community collections is we only have to send a vehicle out. At the moment, obviously, we're looking at the availability of drivers to go out. Secondly, it's about, during the pandemic, social distancing, because what you'll find is there's very little social distancing, because people just turn up and they clear their garages out and turn out. And the other issue that is being looked at across the country is that generally these wagons go out and everything goes into them, even products that could be recycled. So we have to ask our question, is that the best for the environment, or is there a better way that we can actually provide these sort of services? Because we're very keen, obviously, to get as much recycled or reused as possible. So we're not introducing it again at the moment, but it's under review.
Thank you. Councillor Hutt.
Well, I just wanted to ask what's actually being dumped. You know, what proportion is building waste and what is sort of household waste? Do you keep a kind of record?
There is a record of all those figures, because we have to do a quarterly return.
Yeah.
There's a mixture.
Yeah, 50-50
or? It's probably 60-40 on for general rubbish.
It's higher, because what
people will do is they'll put, say, an old microwave in the car and dump it in the country lane, or they'll clear out the garage.
I mean, I've seen these things, and I just wondered what I thought when I saw a three-piece suite on Canada Chase was, well, they brought it this far, they've got the transport, do they not know that they can take it to the tip? I mean, do we need a press release to let people know where they can dump things?
What the other problem can be in when you look at bulky items is what we call the white van man, where somebody will go around and they'll say, oh, I'll take your rubbish away for a tenner. And the householder gives them the £10 thinking it's going to go to a proper source, and then the white van man actually dumps it in a country lane or on the chase.
But even he can take it to a tip, can't he?
But if they're in a commercial vehicle, then they'll probably have to pay for the disposal, because it's a commercial disposal. The problem is with the white van man is probably they haven't got a waste carrier licence. And therefore, the householder who's actually paying for that rubbish to be taken away is not exercising a duty of care. And you can actually be prosecuted if you don't actually get your rubbish disposed properly. So there has been cases where in Stafford Borough where the householder is paying for somebody to take their rubbish away in a white van, it's being disposed of, and there's traceability back to the household, and the householder has actually been prosecuted by the council for not arranging proper disposal.
Again, is it worth it? Because people wouldn't realise that, would they?
We have done sort of campaigns before and advising people, and Keep Britain Tidy do a lot of work on this, which we are actually a member of.
It's worth reminding people.
We try to do it when we do the prosecutions.
Councillor Sutherland.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, what is the fine? Is it £75 or something?
It all depends on the way that we actually go forward. If we do a penalty notice, you're correct there, but quite often we do more than a penalty notice. Or if somebody doesn't pay the fixed penalty notice, we actually take a prosecution. And then obviously there is a higher penalty that has to be paid.
Isn't it worth actually increasing the fine to make people aware that, you know, if I do this and I catch me, I'm going to be in trouble, so financially?
The level of fine is actually fixed by regulation.
All right.
So that's why it's always best sometimes to do a prosecution, because then generally it's means tested against the person's ability to pay.
Councillor Edgeler.
Thank you very much, Chairman. On page 14, 2.2.1.
Can we just hang on just a second? Are we finished on page 13 now?
Sorry, I'll look at it.
It's kind of referred back, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I was just going to make a comment on the how well the empty homes are. Do we have an empty homes officer, Anna?
The empty homes officer has just left her post to become the housing standards officer. We are looking to fill it soon.
Okay, all right. Well done on the the total. Excellent. Okay. Okay, moving on to page 14, Councillor Edgela.
Sorry, documents wrong way around. I just wanted to looking at the environmental crime complex. What sort of complex? I guess it seems an awful lot.
Down on page 14. So, that ranges from the building rubble to mattresses to white goods such as fridge freezers, microwaves, bags of general household rubbish, clothing, decoration, kitchen cupboards. Everything. It's interesting is that where people put out white goods, fridge freezers on the footpath, obviously they don't know who's going to be taking them away.
No.
So
no.
We shouldn't really do that. And what we actually do is when we see a fridge freezer or the likes put out on the on the pavement, we will actually write on it with a indelible pen, which can be seen under ultraviolet, the house by which it was put out. So if that then ends up in a country lane, then we'll know exactly where it's come from.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
You can trace it back. Because what happens with those is that generally the carcass isn't metal.
Mm.
So the metal merchants will just want to take out the condenser and then the motor and then dump the carcass around. So.
Thank you, John. Yeah, quite
interesting. Tracy, I wonder if you could just explain to me 2.1.1. I read this and I read the explanation, but I'd still like a little bit more information if you don't mind.
No, of course not, Chair. So, following the COVID pandemic, the first lockdown, we set up a programme of recovery for the whole organisation. And there was four work streams on that. There was one around economic recovery, community recovery, which this one relates to, financial recovery and organisation recovery. So as part of the community recovery, we've been working very closely with community organisations and in particular Support Stafford, Rising Brook Baptist Church, Stone Community Hub, Stone Helpline, organisations like that, to try and provide sustainable support to the community. We've provided some funding for Rising Brook and for Stone Community Hub, and also provided funding for food banks at the beginning of the lockdown as well. So we've been working closely with parish councils and the webinars that the health and housing team put on, that's been reported previously to this committee. And another work stream in the community recovery plan is to ensure that we have that ongoing support for the voluntary sector. So we run the community awards, which is a celebration event, an annual event. And just a little plug to that, we've just extended the deadline for applications. So please send some more in if you have them. The deadline's now the 27th of September for those. And we also run a Stafford Borough small grant scheme, and this has been running for probably about 3 or 4 years now. So it's administered by the Community Foundation, and we have two rounds a year. And if the committee's interested, I can go through who we awarded from the last award. So we awarded £750 to Period Power, £700 to Stafford Samaritans, £315 to St Thomas's and St Andrew's Church, and £637 to Stafford Little Heroes.
Thank you. Brilliant. Thank you, Tracy. Councillor Pearce, I see your hand up.
No.
No. Okay. Right. Okay. In that case, then 2.2.3, something very close to my heart, HS2. I've read about the section 61 application, M6 Junction 15 and nearby roads. I could not believe it when I was walking my dog opposite to the Wayfarer on the A34. There was a bamboo stick, just an ordinary bamboo stick like that, with a 18-page, I still can't believe it, I've taken photographs, 18 A4 pages with tiny little print on it saying that they were doing this dig. This is a multi-million pound organisation, HS2 Limited, but they stuck a bamboo cane by the side of the road. It disappeared after about 3 days. There was another one then in St Vincent Road in Stone. You know, these are the kind of things that they get bad press for, that, you know, and if you can, next time you go to your committee, if you can just mention to them, there's a much better way of posting documents for the public to see. And it was on a stretch of road, really dangerous, fast road. There's probably only me that's daft enough to walk along there. So, but, we've all signed this non-disclosure, so I wonder how much is actually coming out. But would you like to talk about it, Robert?
Yeah, so virtually what we're into now is they're starting to do preliminary groundwork investigations. So the Section 61s virtually are a method statement of how they're going to do the work and what mitigation they're going to put in place to prevent any statutory nuisance to nearby residents. So they have to outline their methods of working, any equipment they're going to be used, how they're going to insulate against the noise. And by doing the Section 61, they put it to us, and we have to respond in a period of time to say whether we are happy with their method of works. If we're not, then obviously we will go back to them and say you need to do things. If we are happy, we have to sign off the Section 61, which means that if they do the works in accordance with the Section 61, that the council can't take any action against them under the Joint Pollution Act. So it's a method of saying, this is what we're going to do, are you happy? If you are happy, we're going to do it, and you can't take any action afterwards. So we have to be really careful that when we look at the Section 61, so that we're really happy that all the measures are in place. And some of these documents are about that thick, and you have to go through them and make sure that you're happy. So they're starting to come through now. Obviously what's happening is that we have a couple of officers who are dedicated to look at them so we can get consistency, and we can actually do a claim back under a service level agreement for their time. So so we're having a number of councils along the route are having consultants coming in looking at the Section 61s, but our approach is that we want officers who are familiar with Stafford to deal with the Section 61s. So our permanent full-time officers are doing that, and we're backfilling their time with consultants who are doing general environmental health work. Because that way, we've got buy-in to the system. We've got your permanent officers who are going to be here next week, next year, whereas the consultants, they come and they go.
Okay. Anybody got anything to say on that? Can I, Robert, you again, I'm sorry. The 2.2.4 social media campaign, and I see that we send out letters as well, but it does worry me about the older age group who are not digitally aware or don't have the access to computers or smartphones. Do we make a concerted effort to get in touch? I know we're sticking stickers on bins. I couldn't tell you whether there's a sticker on my bin or not. I just grab it, pull it, bring it back in. It does worry me about those, you know, the vulnerable who don't, they're not in the modern world.
Yeah. Obviously, we're trying to cut down on the amount of paper that we actually put out for obvious reasons. However, if somebody wants a calendar, then we will actually still send somebody most of the curriculum actually now on sort of online. It's a hard balance for us to take. There's one way we have to cut down on the amount of paper, but we have to be wary that there are people who don't access it.
We print them off at Age Concern, and you'd be amazed how many people come and say, "You haven't got a bin calendar." Yep.
Yeah, we've got some in the office there, so
yes.
We can always, we will send them out if necessary. But
good.
We are wary that there are people, so we try and do word of mouth as well. So if there is a problem, then we'll get somebody to go around and have a chat.
Thank you. Anybody, Councillor Pearce?
Yes, there has been discussion in the past about food waste collection scheme. Is there any progress on that?
So virtually what's happening at the moment is that there is a government consultation that's going out on waste collections. So it covers things such as garden waste and food waste. So we're hoping now we're in the second stage of the consultation that we should get some guidance from the department in the next couple of months. And one of the recommendations that is going forward is that every council should be looking at collecting food waste. Obviously, what's the recommendations in there are such that potentially the government will recompense local authorities for any increased charging that would come about for the new regime. They would obviously have to go through the Treasury in the government spending review. So most councils will not be moving at all on changing the way that they collect waste until the government is fairly firm, because if you change before the government makes you change, you don't get the money. So we're keeping a close eye on the council.
Thank you, Robert. Anybody else on page 14? Okay, page 15. Councillor Loughran, then Councillor Hobbs.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying, it's again about the social media sort of focus, where it's talking about this favourite local walks and the partnership working with the social media platform Nextdoor. And I've got Nextdoor, but I know people that haven't. And, you need to access all parts of our society, don't we?
I share the concern about social media, and I have actually had people in my ward who have actually asked me about this Nextdoor, because some of them have actually had letters put through their door advertising it, and they've contacted me and said, well, we don't know what to do about this because we don't know who is actually running it. Mm. And whenever you try to get onto either the app, or I think sometimes you get a link, but you've got to use that link in a certain period of time. And there are certain details you have to fill in. And people are a bit concerned about what it is that they are actually putting in of their own personal information. And it does concern me that we're hearing here that the council are using this Nextdoor. Why don't we get told how to use it so that we can at least speak to the people that are contacting us and say, well, don't be worried about it? Because I actually looked up and managed to trace back to who the person was that was doing it. But it's not up to me to then say, oh, it's all right because it's Mrs. So and so, this and such an address. Because where does that leave me with, giving out information about people? And so if I say, it's all very well using social media, but it does give me cause for concern.
Anna, have you come to the table to speak about it?
Thank you. We have obviously had the webinar where Nextdoor was there to promote some of the work they are doing on the walking and being able to share books. But this is only just one method of the information we're putting out. So we do have it under the doorstep books on our website, which again I accept is on the internet. But our team have printed out a number of walks for people who have runners up and asked us for things like that. So it is one method we're using across a wider scope of different methods to get the message around walking out as well. We have a number of walking groups as well, which we're promoting, Walking for Health, and they are doing a lot of this work as well themselves.
Excellent. Councillor Pert.
Comment on a couple of things. First of all, I think you make a simple choice about whether you're going to do anything on social media or not. And I think that the thought of ignoring social media, the genie is already out of the bottle, and we might as well use it. We're not making any comment on what Nextdoor does, but they are a different medium to Facebook. Facebook sort of tends to be a lot more geographically wide, and theirs Nextdoor is very focused. And the fact that we went to them, and this is the first initiative that they have done across Europe, bearing in mind there's 345 odd district borough councils across the country, and that's just the UK before we talk about the rest of Europe, and I don't know what local government looks like in the rest of Europe. And nor do I care really. we closed that door a little while back. I think that sort of demonstrates us trying things. I'm not saying it's going to work, but actually, if we don't try things and fail a few times, then we won't have done enough. And I think that we wanted to give people confidence to take those first few steps out of the house post lockdown. First lockdown, lots of people did lots of exercise, changed some of their habits. Maybe it was because of the weather and the time of the year and those sorts of things. Certainly second and third lockdowns, that's not the case. And so we saw there was a need, and it seemed to me there were a number of strands coming together and actually encouraging people to go out and help their neighbours in a different way. It seemed a good thing to do. I think it was, and I hope we do a bit more of it.
Thank you, Councillor Pert. Councillor Hobbs.
It just wasn't clear on here that it was being used in conjunction with all these other things, was it? That's what we wanted to clarify.
Okay. Yeah.
Through you, Chair, if I may. Part of the work that we're doing on organisation recovery, we are actually looking at procuring a new digital services platform. And although we are trying to encourage more online use for a lot of our services, we do recognise that there are pockets of society and, you know, elderly people who really aren't comfortable with that kind of thing. So, you know, we are trying to open as many ways for people to contact us and use our services as possible, and we're not going to stop. We're not going to force everybody to go down the online route or to say you must use social media or you must do this. Mm. It's about trying to be more inclusive for all of the different cohorts of society in our communities as much as we can. And I will take that back about the communication elements of it, and I will check with our comms manager around what communication's been sent out around some of the Nextdoor stuff, if that would be helpful.
Thank you, yes it would. Councillor Edgell, I'm just going to take Councillor Pert before coming to you.
Just picking up Tracy's point, I know there was a press release done on Nextdoor, and there was a note to all councillors to join the webinar we did on walking, and that was part of that. So I know that was done. The point I was going to make when I came to table was really about the role of aggregators in social social media. We don't drive enough dedicated football to our website and to some of our social media, whether it's posts or tweets or whatever it is. And actually the role of an aggregator, which pulls everything in together into one place, I think is an important thing that we're testing and trialling. And I think it's working quite well just to get other people to share our messages more widely with the general public, because that's the only way, because as I say, you know, I'd love to feel that every member of the public woke up in Stafford Borough and came immediately to our website looking for things that we did and supported them with. But frankly, that's not the case. And so, you know, we do need to, one, to find a one-to-many challenge. I think these sorts of things do. And I would pay tribute to Will Conahan in the work that he does. You know, you look at the size of our media and comms team versus, you know, people across the road. And actually, I think in terms of the coverage, it's first class.
Perhaps we should take to TikTok, Councillor Pert.
Is that one where you swipe left?
Councillor Edgeley.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Well, 2.3.2, 2.3.3 and 2.3.4. Right, the first one, 2.3.2. And there's a lot of talk in there about parish councils. And, you know, throughout the documents and its parish councils, will you please remember, officers, that we've also got community groups. And I'm concerned that sometimes we rely on parish councils, but we forget that the town centre and that the surrounding areas, we haven't got parish councils. Can you make sure that we are, you know, when anything's put out, that some of these community groups are informed of anything that's taking place or what's being said, or so that everybody can be involved? That's my first comment. My second comment on 2.3.3 is about the gatehouse. I've got to say, in all honesty, I think they've put in some fantastic shows on, and I've got to say my bank balance has gone down quite a bit in the last few weeks for the number of tickets that I've bought. So congratulations to the gatehouse. You know, they're doing a brilliant job, and really pleased that and they had a nice chicken panini in there the other day. But also, my question really is to Robert, and I'll bring it out in the public arena, about the market and what is happening with the market, because the number of people that are asking about the market, we had a conversation just before the meeting, but I'd like Robert to put it to the committee exactly where the market's going and what is happening. Thank you.
Are we talking about the indoor market?
Sorry, we're talking about the indoor market.
Sorry, Chair. Development and planning scrutiny.
About the indoor market, because we've got many people in there that's, all right, they've got mortgages to pay, and they're really, really worried about what is happening for the future. And all right, again, I put my mental health hat on, it's causing them mental stress, and it's just not good. I know it's sensitive, and I understand all that. But if you can give them some guidance as to where we're going in the future, thank you.
I think, Councillor Edgeley, that as Mr. Simpson has just said, that's not for this committee. I share your pain.
Well,
I remember the very first
outdoor
meeting
market.
I did.
Outdoor market, all right.
On
well,
this,
sorry.
On this meeting, and I remember we had a really heated debate about the indoor market, so I'm sorry if
okay,
really
all right.
Sorry
okay
about that.
Can I do the same, Lucia? Why are you calling yourself community? No, community involves the community using the indoor market and the people who work in the indoor market. So to say, no, it's nothing to do with the community.
Absolutely.
Well done, you know, don't talk about anything that the community are involved in.
I think it is for the other committee.
Yeah.
I don't think we should.
I don't really agree with you.
Speak, no, and possibly none of us
silent
do, but there we go. Councillor Pert.
Could I just pick up Councillor's question on 2.3.3, I can't really talk about paninis, I think I understand what you mean. But I did just want to say that, you know, subsequent to the writing of this report, and obviously this relates to quarter one, but I think the Stafford Half Marathon, which was last Sunday, was not only well attended, but I think is a first class half marathon. And I think those people who did take part had a brilliant day. And I would pay tribute to Freedom and the people they've worked with to get that off the ground very early on post-pandemic. There are other people still very nervous about big mass participation events, and I think they did a very good job. I would also just comment that the booking for the next half marathon, which is on the 20th March in 2022, has just opened.
Oh, excellent. So we'll all be signing up, will we?
Can I just give you some more information?
Yep.
Obviously, the last race was on Sunday. We've nearly already got, I think it's over 700 sign-ups already for next year's race.
Wow, what's the capacity? What's the maximum?
3,100.
Gosh, that's amazing. Well done.
And well done for finishing that.
Did you take part, John?
Jeremy.
Oh, sorry, Jeremy, you've done it, did you? Oh, well done. What was your time?
Slow.
You
participated. I'm better in March.
It's all the constituents' conversations he was having on the way around.
Yeah. We won't go there. Okay, so I'd like to raise 2.3.4, in particular the street events. And I did raise the fact that we did have a problem with underage drinking, which is just so difficult to detect with those events because there's so many places to go outside and inside, you know, in fairness to the publicans and the restaurants. If they're not inside drinking, they can't see them. And so I just wondered what the outcome was when you investigated that.
Obviously, the sale of alcohol to young people on the street was a matter that we reported to the police. So the police would be taking that matter
okay.
on. However, these events are also subject to a safety advisory group meeting and usually for events where there's multiple occasions, we hold them at the beginning of the year. So what we will be doing is for the safety advisory group to look at the event management plans to ensure that they've put in everything possible to stop these underage sales for next year.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Robert. Councillor Edgeon.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on 2.3.4 about the walking street events in Stafford, actually. I've attended them, and I've got to say, it's such a community spirit out there, you know, when they're taking place, and it's very well attended. So if nobody's ever been and had a drink there in the market square, please attend. It's quite a good evening.
We have, when I say we, with my Stone Town Council hat on, just taken the decision to cancel the Christmas light switch on because we get thousands of people in the high street,
mm-hmm.
and we weren't willing to allow the event to go ahead because of the rise in the COVID numbers. We thought it was a sensible decision, but we are having other events where we don't get the mass crowding. But I think, as Jeremy said earlier, we really do have to continue to be aware of the rising numbers,
oh, yeah.
and you know, it's quite a worry.
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else on page 15? No? Over the page to 16? Anybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Councillor.
2.4.3, you know, and I'm looking at the figures actually about ASBOs and what's been happening. Are there any plans through UCHEC, if I could ask Robert, are there any plans to put any more CCTV cameras anywhere in locations where we think we're having a lot of such behaviour?
Okay. The placement of CCTV cameras, we can't just put them up where we want to do. It has to be an evidence-based process. Virtually, there's a code of practice and guidance from the Camera Surveillance Commissioner, and virtually there has to be very clear evidence, which is usually gathered by the police and goes through Tracy's team before we can put a camera up. And it's all to do with protection of people and data protection side of things, and to ensure that cameras aren't just put up all over the place but are actually targeted to combat either antisocial behaviour or other crimes. And we also, for those cameras that we've already got in place, we have to do regular assessments to determine whether they are still needed or not in place. So at the moment there are a couple of locations where the police are keeping some records for us to determine as to whether additional cameras need to go up.
Yes,
so, as
you
say, there is a process and it has to be evidence led.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Loughran, did you put your hand up?
Yes, yeah. Thank you. It's 2.4.3, which I wanted to ask about. We were being told that during quarter one there were 33 reports of antisocial behaviour. And it says that they were received by the council, and we get these reports about the antisocial behaviour. I'm still interested in whether or not it's 33 different antisocial behaviour activities, or are there several ones about the same one? Because I do know that there are people
who keep records of the same people who are causing a nuisance. So it makes a difference whether it's, you know, 33 people complaining about one person, or whether it's, you know, complaining about another. That, of course, they're saying that there's only 9 of them who were, in actual fact, in tenants of social housing providers. I think that absolutely staggering when I think of the people who are giving me reports of antisocial behaviour activities in their areas. You know, there are a large number of them that I get who, they're about the same groups of people, mm. or the same individual person. But sometimes, as I say, it really does concern me about, do you take cognizance of the ones that are going directly to your housing, your social housing providers, or are we only interested in what's being reported to staff at Borough Council? And the other question I wanted to ask is, if you could give me an explanation about the procedure for the community trigger, how, you know, the councillors go about setting this up, and there's the community protection notice warnings. What is that, and, you know, what community are you going to protect? Is it the town centre, or is it a neighbourhood, or a street, or whatever? And then what comes after the community protection notice warnings?
Through you, Chair. So we all have a statutory duty to investigate antisocial behaviour. So the council has a statutory duty, the police do, housing providers and health. So we all have the same statutory duty. So we're interested in how we constitute antisocial behaviour. It's any action that causes unnecessary harm or not harassment, upset, that type of thing to a person. The ASB issues that we receive at the council are predominantly neighbour disputes that we have. We work in a multi-agency environment that I think I have reported to scrutiny before, that we have the Community Wellbeing Partnership and we have a weekly partnership hub. So at that weekly partnership hub, all of the agencies are able to bring cases for people who either need additional help and support, who are vulnerable. We concentrate on that sort of lower level help and support because there's other help available elsewhere for a more targeted approach. And we're able to bring issues of antisocial behaviour. So if we get a reported incident of antisocial behaviour and we find out that it's somebody who lives in a social landlord's premises, then we will discuss that at the partnership hub, and the housing provider will be expected to take a lead on that case because it's their property and they have extra powers and duties under their tenancies that they can use for those people. But the housing providers will also be receiving incidents of antisocial behaviour around their tenants as well. In terms of the community trigger process, so if we have investigated a case and the victim is not happy, then this gives the power to the victim to be able to escalate it to a multi-agency review. So as long as they have had 3 reported incidents of antisocial behaviour in a 6-month period and they feel that that hasn't been dealt with appropriately, or they haven't received the outcome that they felt that they should have had. So all the guidance, it's on our website, I can send you the link. In terms of the community protection notice, so a community protection notice is a power that we have to be able to put sort of measures in place. So for example, we do have a number of neighbour disputes, so if we feel that a neighbour is acting in an inappropriate way, so it's causing harm and distress to a person in terms of antisocial behaviour, then we will issue a community protection warning that basically outlines a number of measures that they have to adhere to over a period of time. And if they are found to have breached that, then we will serve them with a full notice and a fine.
Can I just ask you, do the housing associations of the social landlord, do they follow that procedure as well?
They should do. They have a statutory duty to follow that procedure.
So they should follow that procedure. And if, for example, sorry,
that's Jack, all right.
If, for example, a person was reporting antisocial behaviour over a period of, for example, 7 months, and this was being reported continually to the social landlord, and it wasn't being resolved, should that person then contact the Borough Council, or what should they do?
It depends on the type of case, and I wouldn't want to comment unless I'd seen the case myself. It depends on what is being reported and what is being investigated. We do have, as a my team actually have, you know, a couple of real long-standing antisocial behaviour cases which are neighbour disputes, and sometimes it's very difficult to actually say that somebody's committed antisocial behaviour without the evidence. It's very, very difficult.
Mm.
So, and some of the cases are very, very complex, because some people who are committing the antisocial behaviour are extremely devious and very clever.
Oh, yes.
So I wouldn't want to comment, but just to say that they really need to press the social landlord for a solution. And they can all, if they are unhappy with the treatment, you know, from the social landlord, then every victim of antisocial behaviour can raise, say that they want to activate a community trigger.
Right. Okay.
Okay,
thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Pearce.
Thank you. First of all, I've got a clarification on what a channel panel is. That's two. In the commentary. But secondly, it's going back to the social behaviour issue. In a situation where the majority of complainants are social landlord tenants, but the person against whom they're complaining is a property owner, would it still be referred to the social landlord or not?
Through you, Chair. So if I answer the question on the channel panel, so for clarification, it's a multi-agency panel of different agencies that sits on a monthly basis, and it's part of the new prevent duty. So we have a duty to attend that, and it's where cases of individuals are discussed. And in terms of the query on ASB, so it's a person who's living in a social landlord's property who is complaining of antisocial behaviour against.
Well, in the instance, I think it's a number of them, but I get somebody who owns their own property within that building.
So they can either report it to the council or they can report it to the social landlord.
Okay.
Thank you. Councillor Edgell.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to Tracy, I'm following on what you've just been talking about, and if there's antisocial behaviour and drugs are involved, and it's a family, you've got parents, and you know, but my concern is what do you follow through then, where children are involved in that family, you know, young children, and you know, it's been proven that drugs are being dealt and the parents are using drugs, so what do you do in that situation regarding the children?
So we would take that case to the hub. If a case like that was reported to us, we would take it to the partnership hub, we would discuss it in a multi-agency arena, we would have county safeguarding involved, we would have the police involved and a number of other agencies, and we would all discuss what intervention was required.
Thank you.
Does anyone else want to speak on page 16? Councillor Barron.
Yes, again, it's the antisocial behaviour. Usually, when we've got antisocial behaviour, we report it directly to the police. Should we report it to the borough as well? Or do the police tell you, or do you tell?
Yeah, so we would share that information. So if there's incidences of antisocial behaviour that are reported to the police,
yeah,
that we should be dealing
on
with, then it will be passed through to us.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some incidents lately. Like the latest craze is tipping cans of beans over people's cars. We've had quite a few incidents on Longwood, and again on that next door, it spreads like wildfire. That they put that down. We got in touch with the police, and what the police always say to us is, "Can you get the people affected to report it?" They don't like. I don't know what it is when we say it, but they. Like the individual that's been, you know, egged or beamed, as they call it, they want them directly. And fully enough, three have said via next up that they will email the police directly and report it. But I just wondered, like you said, I'm just still not clear of the part of antisocial behaviour between the police and the borough. I don't quite get the link.
Yes,
through
you, Chair. So we have a statutory duty to work in partnership with the police, with health, with fire, with the CCGs on all aspects of crime and disorder, antisocial behaviour, domestic abuse, all of this. And we have a duty to share information across all of those agencies. The reason why we encourage people who have been affected by antisocial behaviour to report it is that it helps us with our intervention. So if we're just getting a report from Councillor Barron and he said there was four incidents of antisocial behaviour, it has a great, you know, it's far greater if we have those four separate incidences,
yeah,
because it goes against a code when it's reported.
Oh,
and then we can actually look at, okay, so in terms of Wildwood, for example, we have 15 reported cases, so that would set up a red flag, and then we would be able to do problem profiling exercise and target resources that way.
Right.
So, you know, I would encourage if people are affected by antisocial behaviour that they get their residents to actually report it either to the police or to the council.
That's right. They are a bit loath to report directly to the police.
They can report through to my team.
Talking to the Chief Giles Parsons, and he said, can you get them, this is over another incident, can you get them report directly? And I said, well, surely there's a problem somewhere if they won't report them directly to you.
Yeah.
What's that problem that they won't go to the police? They'll go to the local councillor and complain. They won't go directly to the police. So there must be some kind of trying to understand mistrust. But they just won't, a lot of them won't report it to the police. So then I have to report it on their behalf.
Yeah, so I think I would encourage them to report it through to my team, and I can send Andy the information
maybe
to include in the minutes.
Maybe they'd be more encouraged to report it directly to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a few people waiting to speak now. I'm going to start with Councillor Hobbs. You were the first one to put your hand up.
I'm moving away from that question. I'm looking at 251.
So would you mind then if I went back to Councillor Pert, Councillor Trowbridge.
So just picking up the previous question through you, Chair, I think we spoke earlier at committee about the power of social media, and we talked about it for good through Nextdoor and walks and trying to encourage community-based behaviour. I think what Councillor Barron's talking about is the power of social media, in particular TikTok, for bad. Because this idea of trying to encourage people to, I think it's called beaning, actually, what does it do? What does it achieve? It's beyond me. And I think that's, and trying to encourage people to replicate that just is goes against all the things I would stand for.
I did want to, however, just pick up a slightly different point, because we've spent a lot of time talking about antisocial behaviour because it does affect our communities. But actually, the stuff that Tracy talked about in terms of knitting together little pieces of the whole jigsaw applies just as much to exploitation, whether it's child exploitation or any of the other agendas, you know, in terms of prevent or protect, you know, all of those things. And we hear too often in the media, when you look back at a domestic homicide review or any serious case review, why didn't this agency or that agency know something? So I think the leadership that Tracy has in this space is second to none, and is really important in terms of making sure that, you know, actually those bits of the equation do function and function well, and not necessarily just with some of the statutory partners, but also with a wider range of partners in this space, because it is important that we do share information. And far too frequently I hear this GDPR nonsense. Sorry, I don't mean it in a rude way. It is used sometimes as a barrier for sharing information, and we need to be able to see much of the whole picture to make sure that we have cohesive communities. But that was the point I wanted to make.
Thank you, Councillor Pett. Councillor Trowbridge.
Add a little bit, if that was all right. I sit on police crime panel, and I've done for many years. And just to sort of back up and add a little bit to what was said here earlier, if you report somebody else's crime, it's just hearsay, and there's no record against it. So the police would encourage them themselves, so they get a police number. And as Robert said earlier, with cameras, unless you've got these numbers proving that is why, coming through you second hand is just hearsay. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you, thank you. Councillor Loughran, do you want, is that to do with, right, so I'll come back to you then. So Councillor Edgeley.
Yeah, I just want to mention, following up on what Councillor Shorbridge just said, that it's the police crime panel meeting on the 23rd of September at the county buildings. It's an open meeting to the public, you know, but if any councillors have got anything at all, because I represent the borough on that committee, if anybody's got any queries or anything that want me to put to the police crime commissioner regarding anything that's taking place, or they feel that they want to have a voice and they don't want to do it themselves, please send it to me and I'll raise it at the meeting as a question for the Police Crime Commissioner. So that's on the 23rd of September.
Okay, I will say that I recently had to get in touch with the Police Crime Commissioner, and I can honestly say he was so helpful. It was like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And I you know, that is absolutely true. If you've got anything, speak to Ben Adams. He's just remarkable. Yeah.
Can I just mention, I don't find it very, I mean, I've been on that panel for a while, and of course there is an open there for the public to put questions, but we very rarely get public questions, and it's, you know, it's a bit,
you did
so much happening, and yet there's no questions
you after. Did from Stone, and I think the previous crime commissioner said it was exaggeration, and then realised he'd made a big book. That's why I'm saying this guy is very good. He knows his facts. I'd like to add just a tiny bit to this. I had the pleasure of meeting Helen Marshall, who, for those of you who've already met her, I hadn't, and she is just brilliant. She is a no messing, no fuss officer. Gives it straight down the middle, and it was a great pleasure to meet her. And to Helen Marshall, she's in Tracy's.
Oh, right.
She's my new antisocial, well, fairly new ish antisocial behaviour officer, and she's exceptional.
I would think she's got years and years of experience. I don't know, but she was incredible.
Yeah, she's a brilliant
appointment. Yeah, very, very likable. Immediately, it's. Yes. Yeah. So Anne Hobbs, you're next.
No?
Angela?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to ask, you're mentioning in 2.5.1 about the funding that has been secured for a health inclusion worker
And you mentioned further on that you're also bringing in a dual diagnosis worker. And I wondered actually if these officers are now in situ or if you're about to advertise for them. And I was also wanted to mention about the troubled individuals pilot. And I think, you know, if my interpretation of them all working together and making sure that there is support being given to these troubled individuals whenever they are being housed, that is fantastic, as long as the support stays with them, because very often the support is put there, but I sometimes wonder, where in God's name has the social services gone? Where is the support that they're supposed to be getting from there? And you get told, well, there's social worker involved there, and you just think, well, there might be on paper, but not in practical use.
Thank you, Chair.
To start with the health inclusion worker and the housing solutions officer, yes, both of those are in post. The health inclusion worker is an officer from MPFT who works really closely with our team, and we have a direct contract with MPFT to ensure that the health needs of the people we support are met. So that is working really well at the moment, and he works alongside the officers in the housing options team. The housing solutions officer is within the housing options team and specialises in working with private landlords to ensure we get enough properties coming forward to be able to house people who come to us who need properties. The Troubled Individuals Programme, I have to apologise for the name. It isn't the greatest name, and we are looking to have a more appropriate naming of it. But it came from the Troubled Families approach, which is very much around ensuring that all agencies are working together to support the individual and ensuring that rather than the individual having to go through every different agency's systems and processes and meeting all the thresholds they need, they actually get a much more joined up approach with one support worker who can then engage with all those agencies and ensure that the right support package is put in place to enable them not only to access accommodation but then to sustain that as well. So this isn't something that just happens and then the support disappears. It's recognising it's a longer term approach, and people do need to help sustain the tenancy as well, and all those agencies need to be engaged to actually make that successful. So that's very much where we're looking at the moment, working very closely with County Council and MPFT and all the other different agencies as well on this.
What is MPFT?
Sorry, Midlands Partnership Foundation Trust.
Thank you.
Would anybody else like to ask Anna anything before? No.
Can I just mention, picking up what Angela's just said, I'm partner governor from the County Council on the Midland Partnership Foundation Trust. So any queries that you've got to ask Anna, you know, you want to put that.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Councillor Kerr.
Thank you, Chair. Committee will remember that way back maybe 2015-16 we were involved in doing some pilot work on the Housing First project, and arguably this has evolved over many iterations and many different other pieces of work we've done in terms of trying to ensure that people get into sustainable long-term housing. I think this is, you know, the sort of the next level on. We keep changing and modifying to get those people who are, you know, the furthest away from long-term housing, some of those complex characters and individuals, into that objective of sustainable housing. I think this is really a step forward in doing that. Because there's a key recognition that housing is a key element for people's health and well-being. Actually, if you haven't got sustainable long-term housing, if it's insecure, if you've not got a roof over your head, then actually, I mean, if you take that, not a roof over your head, probably die 30 years before you should. You probably be suffering worse health than you should, and incidence of ASB much more prevalent. So this is, you know, this is a key initiative, not an initiative. This is a key
additional piece of work that we're doing, and is recognised by central government as moving forward our homelessness agenda within the borough. From my perspective, you know, this is a lead that we're doing across the whole of Staffordshire, so we are the first authority where this is being tested from across the whole of Staffordshire. And I think we probably underplayed the work that we have done on that and the thinking that has gone into this, because frankly this is it has been 5 or 6 years in the making is what I was trying to say. I would also say we've got more complex cases coming through, and I think people can understand why we've got more complex individuals, and so that coordinated approach where we look at the individual as a whole rather than just as a you know, a housing need, I think is a really important way forward.
Thank you, Councillor Pitt. Councillor Angel.
Just to pick up on what Councillor Pitt's saying, I mean, having been involved with somebody that was homeless, and I think it's very difficult. You get them into a home, but at the same time, problem you've got then is keeping them involved with the people that want to help them, you know, move forward. And I think that's one of your main challenges, you know, keeping them involved and making sure they attend meetings when they're supposed to attend meetings. It's very, very difficult, yes. And having someone in the family that was sleeping on the streets and begging them to come home, and they wouldn't come home, you know, and I'll be honest with you, and I don't want this minuting, Andrew. You know, when my son, when I'm driving out somewhere and he's walking behind the car and I'm saying, please, get in the car and come home. No, I don't want to. We need someone to go back to the people living on the streets and come home. So you've got a very complex situation there on your hands. But as I say, once you get them settled, it's keeping them settled and making sure they attend the meetings, and that's your biggest problem.
Thank you for sharing that. I'd just say two things. One is, as much as the team, and it is not just, you know, Anna's health team, it's a wider team across many partners, as much as the team want to help everybody into sustainable long-term housing, we can't help everyone.
No.
Not everyone wants to accept that help. But equally, we have people within the team who would tell me that they will go to an appointment nine times and they'll miss, the person they're going with will miss it nine times, but they'll still make an effort for the tenth time, and that's the time that someone attends.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the quality of caring individuals that we have within the team.
I suppose we're a victim of our own success, because we are a beautiful borough. People want to live here. We're building houses. We've got the MOD, which is, you know, loads of people there, and inevitably families break down for one reason or another, and then we end up with homeless rough sleepers. Do we have a figure for the borough for the homeless and the rough sleepers, or is that a ridiculous question?
It's not a ridiculous question at all. I think with rough sleepers it changes constantly, so we do keep a monitor on it all the time, basically. For central government reporting purposes, we have to do an estimate once a year, and we report that back to central government as well. But the numbers fluctuate. We have people coming and going. We get people into information and fall out. So that's something we are looking at on a day-to-day basis. I think generally homelessness figures are much more complex than that, because there's almost the legal definitions of that.
Yes.
And, you know, those that we prevent from being homeless, those that we relieve from being homeless. But we also have those, obviously, in temporary accommodation as well. So we are aware of all the figures. It's just that quite meaningless if I just reel one off to you, because you need to understand the trends and how it works like that.
Do we understand how many young people are sofa surfing and moving from friends to friends?
We are aware, obviously, of those that come into the attention of the service. We have very detailed data reporting obligations central government, so we do have quite a good breakdown of those with different support needs, those who are younger, those who have families, older people and things like that. So we do have a wealth of data there that we can look at and understand sort of the trends and what we see in Stafford as opposed to other local authorities as well.
Thank you. Councillor Pat.
Thank you. Just to give you a direct answer to your question, notwithstanding what Anna's just said, these are published figures, so I think I'm fairly okay using them. In the last few years, it varies between 5 and 10 in terms of the rough sleep account. Obviously, at times we're much underneath the 5, but it's a moving feast. I would say that we know everyone by name, because I think that every rough sleeper is an individual, and we need to treat them as individuals and have individual plans for them. So we will know them all by name, and their circumstances varies, depends on our number. The other thing I would say is, and I hope councillors have had the opportunity to look at the documents that were circulated last week regarding housing options, I would encourage anyone who is at risk of homelessness or being roofless to contact housing options at the earliest opportunity, because housing options can work with people from as much as 56 days away from someone losing their tenancy, because the earlier that happens, the sooner we can ensure that people aren't roofless, because actually intervention at that point, the options are significantly less. So I would encourage councillors to go through the 24 pages of options advice, because it's actually good stuff, and Hayley Smith and her options team do a good job in terms of trying to prevent homelessness as early as possible and as much as possible.
All right, thanks for that. Thank you, Anna. Does anyone else have... yes, I do, on page 17. Each time that we 2.5.4, each time that we look at the disabled facility grants, they're always below target, and I think somebody always asks that question: is there any way that we can publicise this, or is that not wise to do that?
I think we have a number of cases coming through the service. Unfortunately, we have seen quite a bit of poor performance over the last couple of years, and I would be reluctant to put more people through the system potentially when we've got long waiting periods, and the DFG are taking longer to complete. That said, anybody who does need a DFG, I'd absolutely say definitely come through the front door, which is through Staffordshire Cares. We don't want to be publicising beyond the need that we've got about, but absolutely. It's not that we haven't got the need, then necessarily it is about the time it's taking to complete the interventions, basically.
Thank you. Councillor Pratt.
Thank you, Chair. Just in answer to your question, we've been starting to lay the groundwork, and I think it is the groundwork, the foundations, for resolving a number of the issues, and you'll be aware that was a recent policy document that went through Cabinet that is designed to support more people more easily. So there is a clear recognition of some of the issues, but unfortunately some of this takes time. It is a bit like a super tanker, because we're not in control of our own destiny, because it is a partnership of 6 other local authorities, and there is a provider who we're trying to extensively work with a recovery programme to resolve some of the issues that are there.
Excellent, thank you. Councillor Loughran.
Thank you, Jim. Is it maybe time that we looked at changing the person who is actually at the company that is helping the Borough Council? The same company and yourself throw this rubbish from them. Period, they can't do them, and they're not dealing with the actual work, they're dealing with the approval of them. Sometimes you really need to look at what is happening on the ground.
Through you, Chair, thank you. We will take that on board.
I sincerely hope so. Thank you very much.
Most definitely.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, both of you. I did have other points in that page, Chair. So
you did. Sorry, go on, Councillor Loughran.
I just wondered, imagine that I don't want to be told that because of COVID they have been stopped. But I wonder when we can expect to have the inspections of our private landlord properties resume. I know that someone who has a friend who has several houses, and their houses used to get
inspected on a fairly regular basis to see that they were in fact coming up to the standard that we expect to have in even our private landlords' properties. That's the first point. And so that I can get the other question in, please, I sincerely hope, and I'm sure I'll be told the answer. It's good to see the progress that was made in Glover Street, but have you in actual fact had any feedback from the residents in Glover Street? Are they as delighted with the work that has been done there as the cabinet member seems to be, and also our officers? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Loughran. Who would like to take that? You first, Anna. Thank
okay,
you.
Yeah. The private sector properties, the service has continued to operate all the way through the lockdown. What we have been doing is obviously receiving the cases that come in and then risk assessing them as to those that we need to go after and those that we don't. So proactively inspecting HMOs, which is something we used to do a lot of the time, we have risk assessed. We also don't know who's in the properties or anything like that. So if we need to go out, we will do, having had all the phone calls and that to understand what's the situation. But if we can give advice and guidance over the phone without risking the health of anybody, we will absolutely do that. All the complaints that come in, though, if we have to go out, we will go out, and we have been throughout lockdown. We just need to ensure that the person inside is not vulnerable as well, and who would want to visit from us if it is necessary for us to go out. So we're risk assessing everything and continuing to do the work that we need to do. So if there's any cases that you're aware of that, you know, you would raise with us, we're absolutely still taking
place. Chair, I thought you actually used to, as a matter of course, visit the private landlord's properties. Because this person who owns the property says that he used to regularly be told, right, we're coming out to look at your property. And he doesn't only own houses that are in multiple occupations. There are families in houses that you know, so.
Yeah, we don't regularly inspect all private sector properties unless there are complaints. It's, you know, obviously there's a significant proportion of properties in the borough that are privately rented, so we wouldn't have the resource to be able to inspect all of them if we have no reason to believe that there's actually a risk to any health at all.
Okay. And Councillor Pett.
Thank you, Chair. So I think there is about 7,500, I think my number is right, roughly, private sector houses within the borough. So you know, that would be a mammoth task. And I think we're right to focus our resources on those who show the most risk, or those where residents are complaining. And many times quite rightly, and we've taken a few prosecutions over the years on that. However, the couple of points I wanted to make was we try and encourage our landlords to invest in their properties, and I'm really pleased that we're working towards a new date for the next landlords forum, which should be before the end of the year, because I think through sharing information, some of these landlords, you know, the average landlord has probably three properties. You know, often they come into being landlords by accident rather than by design. And so actually sharing information, particularly legislative changes that are going on, is really important. And actually encouraging them to do to invest is the right way of doing that, in my view. And where that carrot doesn't work, then, you know, the stick of prosecution, or but the prosecution is always the last thing. You know, if we go and inspect, we will try and advise them on what they need to do. And many are very diligent in what they're doing, and we'll go and invest to take up the standard of that property. In terms of Glover Street, I'm really pleased that we finally got this one over the line, because frankly it should have been done many years before. We've seen delays thanks to the planning issues with the Environment Agency. Really pleased we found a really creative way around that problem with a bit of help from the Environment Agency, in fairness. What I would say is, whilst that's good, we've lost a few pitches off Glover Street, and we still are looking, and I raise this both at the planning scrutiny committee and at this one on a regular basis, we are still looking for an additional gypsy and traveller site. And I would encourage every member around this table to participate in that search, because this is not up just for the officers to do or for the cabinet to do, this is up for all of us to do. We have a responsibility to go and find an additional site, and I would encourage every member to look through their own wards
and bring something forward to the table, because in the 7 years I've been asking this question, I tell you how many I put forward, and I tell you how many other members have put forward. The other members starts with a zero.
Thank you. Councillor Edgeler.
Councillor Pert, I think I've got an answer to your question.
Brilliant. Yes,
I don't know whether you're all aware, but we have gypsies on Camp Chase on at the weekend on Milford Common. I don't know whether you're aware, Andy, it's in your batch. I drove past, I saw, and they're proper Romany gypsies with the, what, I don't know what you call them, round, you know, with the, pulling the horses, and but they were collecting wood. And then I had a conversation with Councillor Trowbridge, and she saw them making a fire not long afterwards. So I think you all should be aware that we've got. So there you are, Milford Common, Mr. Councillor Pert.
No.
I didn't think that was in your ward.
They're making their own decisions there. Don't minute that, Andrew, please.
Sorry.
I just want you to be aware that we've got gypsies.
Go on,
I did report it to Councillor Francis.
Yeah, through you, Chair. I suspect it's probably the same group of Romanys.
Yeah.
That park up on the main road at A51 junction in Great Haywood twice a year. They've just moved on, they go to Rugeley, and you see them popping up on the road towards Lichfield, and their horses feed on the verges, and then they move on. You won't get them residing on it.
It's the fire situation, I think, that was worrying, especially on the chase.
Are we done with page 17? Okay, moving on to the even smaller print. I think we've covered quite a lot of these points already, which is clarification of what we've discussed. But if anyone would like to bring up anything on page 18. Councillor Loughran, my personal opinion to your dilemma with the print, which I also have, but these glasses are 4.5, sent off 4 on the internet. Can't see anybody through them, but I can see the print. I think the idea was they would try to discourage us from printing off sheets and sheets of paper. But if we actually use our iPads or our laptops, we can make the print go bigger. But very often the iPads on the laptops don't work.
I'm just looking, and I printed this off myself, and I think the print was actually smaller than printing this off, and it's not my laptop at home. And I think that Councillor Hawkes' print is slightly bigger than mine. quite seriously, did you do something in the civic offices to make the print larger?
Is it Andrew?
Because I couldn't make it any larger with my piece of with my machine at home.
I think it's probably print settings.
You know, can we have lessons in how to make it larger for ourselves then? Because I actually got a ruler out and thought to myself, you know, measuring all of this, there's a third of this not being printed on, and if it was enlarged a bit, then I could maybe do it a wee bit better. You know, I've got to send me a torch and a magnifying glass.
I think in all seriousness, we do need to ask for larger print. Andrew, if you can take that back, please.
Can I ask through you, Chair, just it's on this page that I've made a note. I can read my own language, my own writing. But I wonder if you know about the residents who have fallen behind with their council tax payments. Are you going to tell me that's not for this committee?
Yeah.
Okay. Very probably, yes. But do we in actual fact, are we assisting our residents who are behind with their council tax?
I don't think that this is for this committee.
Well, that's a grievous.
I'm sorry.
I sat on every committee.
Sorry about that. Tracy, did you want to speak?
It was just on the issue of printing, Chair, because the
documents are designed to be used on a laptop or an iPad, which is why when they're printed out, it is quite small. Under our climate change agenda, we are trying to reduce the amount of paper that we use and the amount of printing that we use, which is why we're trying to encourage use of laptops and iPads. However, if there are issues with member laptops and iPads, then please report it to our technology department, and hopefully they'll be able to provide something a bit better for members.
I mean, this is probably the kiss of death. My laptop's working at the moment, and I can enlarge it, and I can read it perfectly by manipulating the screen. So you're right, it is ideal on this.
I think it's a question of confidence as well, isn't it? I saw a councillor in the planning committee who was really upset because she couldn't get what she wanted on her iPad. You know, and I think, I was being polite, Carolyn. and it is very frustrating, but I suppose it is a question of confidence in, you know, the iPad or the laptop that we're using.
Connecting the laptop to the TV screens and having the reports on the TV screens.
That's an excellent idea.
An option.
There's also people focused on the one that we're talking about.
Okay, are we done on page 18, or does anyone have anything else to say on page 18? If not, I think we are done, yes. Andrew, if we move over to you for the work programme.
Yes, very briefly, Chairman. The work programme is listed on the appendix on page 21. The November meeting is quite a heavy agenda, but we will be looking to move the meeting slightly to accommodate the presentation by staff to rural homes.
Excellent. Is that okay? Councillor Pearce?
Moving, bringing forward.
Not the time, but moving the date.
Oh, moving the date.
Councillor Pearce?
So, I wanted to comment about one of the other meetings.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
If Andrew's finished on.
Yeah.
So, just the point is made that it should be a member-led process, and obviously it's helpful for the officers to provide some indication of what issues we need to be considering. But in addition, I think we ought to be identifying issues that we believe need to be looked at. And I see that the March meeting, for example, doesn't have a particularly heavy agenda. So I wonder if we could be having a look at an issue that concerns me, particularly, which is charge policy. In terms of being a barrier to health and well-being, poverty is a major issue, and particularly child poverty. I'd like to consider that if we start moving to support that here.
I don't see any reason
to repeat that.
Child poverty.
That's right. So I'm suggesting that at a future meeting, possibly the one on the 8th of March, we look at that and invite organisations and the Child Poverty Action Group, as the various agencies that support people in financial difficulties.
I'm not sure that that's for this committee, but Councillor Pert.
Thank you, Chair. As I think I mentioned earlier, anything which is a cross-cutting issue gets picked up by the county scrutiny. Anything which is a specific, you know, flavour of Stafford gets picked up by this committee. So I do question whether that child poverty is not just one of those sort of general, very cross-cutting issues. I don't know the answer to that. That's for committee to decide, because you decide your own agenda. The second point I'd make is, what is the borough's role and what levers does it have? Because you could discuss anything you wanted to, but actually if you don't have the levers to do anything about it, it is no more than a discussion. and I would think that those probably two relevant points. You may also want to look at your terms of reference that Andy will have, because that would guide what is within your scope and remit as a committee, in my view. But you need to take your own decision on some. I'm sure Andy can advise on those three issues.
Okay, thank you.
It is questionable whether it's in the committee's remit, because the...
Well, can you have a look at it and come back to that at the next meeting?
We can look at that. I mean, I'll put it on the work programme as an additional item, and then we can advise then at the meeting.
Just before we move on, I just want to make the point that, you know, the committee isn't just here to scrutinise the work of the executive, as it were, the cabinet. It's here to look at issues which are relevant to the remit of this committee, health and wellbeing, community wellbeing, and make recommendations.
Councillor
Pat. I take on board the councillor's point, albeit it is an overview and scrutiny committee. I think there is a requirement to look both at what's going on today and what's going forwards, and which is why I do think there is a need to focus in on what levers the council has and what it's doing in those areas. However, there are other tools that the committee have rather than just a formal overview and scrutiny committee. For example, you can have a working party, you can have an inquiry day, you can do any number of other things that touch the point that is being made on the table, around the table, rather than, you know, having it necessarily in a formal setting as this. But Andy may be able to be best placed to advise you on those things.
Okay, Councillor Edgler.
Yeah, just picking up that point. I mean, this committee actually, I mean, if there's anything at all that's pertinent to Stafford Borough regarding health and wellbeing, then yeah, we should be scrutinising it and looking at it, you know, as long as it's just pertinent to Stafford Borough. You know, so if anybody, any of the councillors can think of anything within the borough that's causing major concerns or anything, then bring it to this committee so we can, you know, scrutinise it and discuss it.
Okay.
But child poverty is very pertinent, isn't it? But it's increasing across the borough.
But it's across the whole of Staffordshire, if you like, if you put it that way, because there are areas of deprivation throughout Staffordshire.
Can I just take, Tracy, please?
Could I just make a recommendation for you, Chair, that we take that away and we actually look at the terms of reference. We circulate the terms of reference to the committee, and then perhaps members could have a look at what's included in that remit.
Okay.
And then make some suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely fine, yes. Yeah, we've got those.
Yep. Fine.
Okay.
Chair.
Yes.
Can I just say that in noting that you're meeting for November, you're about to have a presentation by Stafford and Rural Homes. I wonder if you could in fact invite all members of council to that, because I think there are quite a few members who have concerns about Stafford and Rural Homes, myself included.
It's a murder. Specialist citizens.
Sorry.
Stafford.com, but I think you ought to invite them. You know, if you're inviting Stafford and Rural Homes, I think there are other housing providers that we could do, we have a scrutiny committee as well.
All councillors can come anyways.
Yes, they can. Yes. Councillor Perth.
I certainly think that was the intention, but that's not for me to say, because that's your choice. But I think that was the intention to advise all councillors.
Chairman, mm-hmm. Can I just express this? Obviously, an invitation of all councillors would have some difficulty, obviously, holding the meeting in this room.
Yes.
Due to the maximum capacity we have in this room. So inviting all councillors would potentially, we would need to have exact numbers, because potentially we would have to move venue. And
yes.
The venue we usually use in that case would be Rising Brook. Mm-hmm. So there are implications on the back of the numbers.
Okay.
Okay, Councillor Kerr.
So you have first come, first serve.
I believe the other place is we need to take external bookings from the end of this month.
All right. Okay. So does this committee want to invite all councillors, or do we see it as a, it's an open invitation anyway, because councillors do come to the school?
My personal view is it would be a good idea, because there are a lot of, you know, councillors that have got, yeah, Housing Plus and what have you, and the rural homes within there.
Okay.
The other concern, obviously, is that potentially the more elected members that attend, the greater will be the time spent on that item.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the agenda,
it's
already very busy.
Yes.
And probably
it
started at 6:30. It looks like a 3-hour meeting to me already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, here we are, quarter to nine now. And
special meetings.
It might be.
You've got to stick to a rigid timetable. If there's only this, you know, everything should be random on one timetable, because it's timetable.
There is actually another presentation to add to this that Tracy's got.
So if we do invite all of the councillors, I can't see us getting through it in 3 hours. We're not going to get through it.
Yeah, Marky and Marvin.
Could we look to maybe scheduling an additional date to take that presentation?
Yeah. Just that presentation.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. If you can find a date.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? It's been suggested that we just have the Housing Association as a single meeting.
Fine.
I'm sorry to interrupt your meeting.
3 hours.
Oh dear.
What date are you looking at, Aaron?
We would have to come back with a date.
Yeah. In November.
Mm.
Yes. Okay, so do we have anything else to say, anybody? Or can we close the meeting, please?
Okay.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you.